Great to have you with us for Garden Talk. Larry Mueller here. You know, it seems like everywhere you look these days, you see raised beds of some kind. And in Garden Talk now, we're going to be talking about the benefits of growing that way and how to do it with our guest, Scott Wilson. He is better known as YouTube's Gardener Scott. And he is a Colorado-based master gardener, has more than 400,000 YouTube subscribers. And I was looking at some of his videos today. He really does a nice job across a whole variety of topics relating to gardeners. I can see why he has 400,000 people as subscribers, because he does a really good job. For the 4.5 years, he oversaw the development of 105 raised garden beds and 20,000 square feet of garden space at the Galileo Garden Project in Colorado Springs, and taught hundreds of people about gardening. And he's also the author of Gardener Scott's Guide to Raised Bed Gardening. Gardener Scott's Guide to Raised Bed Gardening. And that's what we'd like to talk about with him today. Do you have a raised garden you'd like to bring to a different level? Or maybe you're starting from scratch? He's got some answers for us, and you can join in. The number to call, 800-642-1234. It's 1-800-642-1234. Or send an email to talk@wpr.org. That's talk@wpr.org. Gardener Scott, welcome. Thanks for joining us today. Appreciate it very much.
Oh, it's great to be here, Larry.
Many options. I was looking at some of your videos, including even making a raised bed out of cement board. And there are many other ways to do it. And maybe we start with what we put inside the beds. What's a good starter bed material for a raised bed?
Yeah, that's a good question. I think that's one of the main benefits of raised beds, is that you can fill it with whatever you want. Here in Colorado, the soil is just terrible. And so it takes years to amend the soil and get it to the point that we can actually have a garden in an in-ground bed. But with a raised bed, you could fill it and a day later start growing in it. And it all comes down to, of course, the organic matter that you've got in the soil, particularly in a state like Colorado, where the whole state now is under drought conditions. The organic matter in the soil helps moderate the soil temperature. It adds nutrients. It really helps promote a healthy soil for all the microbes that are going to be providing nutrients to the plants. And so I like to do a blend, because I think what is often missed in raised beds, people will just go to the store and buy a bunch of bags of potting soil and dump it into a box and expect that plants are going to grow. But we do need a mineral component, and we need a good structure in the soil. And so I'll take some of my terrible native soil, and then I'll mix it with the organic matter to create the soil that I'm going to be growing in the raised beds.
So you get a nice you get a nice combination there then.
Yeah, absolutely. And I use all different types of organic materials. Compost, of course, is the one that most gardeners are aware of. But I do most of my amending of my raised beds in fall. And I'll use the mulch that I had on the bed over the course of the summer. So I like to use a blend of straw and crushed leaves and dried grass clippings. And then in the fall, I'll just put some compost on top of that and turn it into the soil. And I have all of late fall, winter, and early spring for that material to decompose and enrich the bed. So by the time spring comes along, I don't have any work to do. I just
put you're ready to go again. ready to go again. So what about location for raised beds? I guess that may depend a little on what you're putting in them.
Absolutely. So you can put a raised bed virtually everywhere. And so I've got wooden raised beds and steel raised beds and stone raised beds and concrete block raised beds. And I even have a raised mound that is a raised growing space. It's a raised bed. And so you know, generally when we grow vegetables, it's recommended in full sun, but I have some beds that are in shade because the plants I'm growing in them are actually shade loving plants and shade preferring both annuals and perennials. So it all depends. My vegetable beds are in full sun because that's what the plants like, and some of the nice hostas and astilbe and plants like that are in more of a shaded area.
Yeah, I mean, for somebody just starting with this, I mean, what size would you recommend for a raised bed?
Again, it depends on what you're going to grow. Now, particularly for gardeners who are just starting with the idea of growing in a raised bed, a 4 feet wide by 8 feet long bed is ideal because you can go down to the garden center, you buy three boards that are 8 feet long, you cut one of them in half, and that becomes the ends. So you've got a 4 foot end on each side, and then the other 2 8 foot long beds are the sides. And that's one of the easiest ways to get into raised bed gardening is with a 4 foot by 8 foot bed. But I've got round beds. I've got a hexagonal bed that is 3.5 feet wide. I used flagstone to create kind of kidney shaped beds. And so in the stone kidney beds, that's where I'm growing annuals and flowers because it's very decorative. But in the raised 4 foot by 8 foot bed, I've got a series of those that define my vegetable garden. But if you're growing up against a fence or you've got some kind of barrier, then you would want a narrower bed. So the nice thing about 4 feet by 8 foot is you can get all the way around. You can reach in, you can weed, you can harvest, you can sow. But if you're gardening up against a fence, most of us don't have a 4 foot reach with our arm. So you only would want a bed that might be 2 feet wide. Mm-hmm. And you could have it along the whole stretch of the fence, maybe 20 feet. So now you've got a raised bed that's 20 feet long and 2 feet wide because that's what fits against the fence. So it all depends on where you're gardening and what you want to be growing.
And what I was thinking about tomatoes. I did raise some tomatoes in straw bales, and it was amazing to me at the end of the season to see how long the roots were of those tomato plants. I mean, they went all the way down and through the end of the bale. What do you recommend for a height?
Yeah, that's a good question. And I've seen some studies that show that tomato roots can be 3 feet long if they're growing in the right conditions. And so that's an important step. If you've got good soil underneath your raised bed that the roots can grow into, then you might only need a 10 or 12 inch high bed just to define the growing space and all the other plants you could be growing in it. But like for me, and with terrible Colorado soil, my raised beds tend to be about 16 to 20 inches high for that exact reason. So that most of the plants I'm growing in those beds have enough room for full root development in and within the raised bed.
Well, when they're that higher, there's less bending involved.
Well, you know, and those of us of a certain age, that is a priority. And so my vegetable garden beds are 2x lumber and you know, generally around 18 inches as an average. And I like that. I can sit on them. I can do all my work without bending over and actually putting my full weight on those beds, which is definitely an advantage after hours in the garden.
Scott Wilson, our guest today, YouTube's Gardener Scott. It's great to have him with us as we talk raised beds with him. You may have some questions about beds or the flowers or vegetables that go in them, and I hope you'll join in. Number to call, 800-642-1234, or you could email us. The email address is talk@wpr.org. I'm Larry Mueller for Garden Talk here on WPR News. Talking about raised beds and the plants that go in them today with Scott Wilson, better known as Gardener Scott. And his YouTube videos are absolutely great. I think he does a wonderful job. And you can join in. The number 1-800-642-1234. Email to talk at WPR.org. How have your raised beds been doing? And maybe questions about them or just getting started with a raised bed. I hope you'll join in. Appreciate your calling. I was wondering about watering. With raised beds, sometimes we maybe need to do more. It's kind of a container garden in a way, is it not?
Yeah, it tends to be drier because you've got the bed exposed on all four sides above the ground. So like for those of us who live in very windy, hot, dry areas, the bed does dry out faster and it does require more watering. But inversely, for people who live in very wet regions where they get a lot of rain and the ground is saturated most of the year, raised beds can actually be a solution there because they drain so well and because they tend to dry out a little bit faster. And so people I know that live in the humid, rainy areas like raised beds because they can grow without waiting for the soil to dry out, while those of us who live in dry regions do need a little more organic matter in the soil because that organic matter acts like little sponges. And so even though the bed generally will dry out faster, a good, rich, amended soil doesn't require that much more watering than just a typical in-ground bed.
Do you set out? I mean, you've got a lot of beds.
Yeah.
And you must have to do some watering. I mean, do you use the soaker hoses or what? Or do you run around with a can or what?
I walk around with a long hose. I like to do hand watering primarily because I like to get up close and personal with my plants. And so different plants have different watering needs. And so I can check my soil before I water. I can see if the plant needs water, get an idea of how much water it might need. And in the process, I can get a head start. If I see a pest come into the garden, if I see the potential disease that's happening on the leaves, I can nip it in the bud quite literally because I'm in the garden on a daily basis most of the time. In the summer, I'm having to water daily here in Colorado, but I don't mind it. It's very cathartic. I enjoy the time in the garden, and hand watering is just one of those things that I like. Now, of course, I do have soaker hoses. I've got one area of beds. It's a square of beds, each about 25 feet long. So I've got 100 feet of soaker hoses in that area, primarily for my tomatoes, just because it is a little bit easier to do a broad area like that. But for the 4-foot by 8-foot beds, it's pretty complicated to try to put a lot of drip irrigation or individual hoses. So I just walk around and water them.
Let's talk about pests for a minute. You mentioned pests kind of in passing. How do you control or work with pests?
So I practice integrated pest management. So I really like to use a balanced approach. I don't revert to chemicals as a primary method. Right now, I'm actually enjoying it. I have a native wildflower that is attracting black aphids, and I love growing native plants in the periphery of my garden for that reason, because every day I walk out, I see more ladybugs that are landing on those plants to deal with the aphids. And now those ladybugs have a home in my garden, and they're already to go to battle with anything that happens to appear. And that's kind of the approach I take. I grow grasses, I grow herbs, I grow flowers. I just have a very wide diversity of plants, both in raised beds and outside the raised beds, to attract the predatory insects and really kind of let nature work with me to deal with the pests.
Yeah. And a variety. I mean, I'm wondering, too, about diseases. Are they a bigger problem or maybe a lesser problem in a raised bed?
And for pests in general?
For disease, I'm sorry.
Oh, for disease. Okay. A lot of it depends on the region. So I am virtually disease-free in my garden, because one of the nice things about the raised beds is you kind of have a built-in area where all of those plants are. And so if a plant in one bed becomes infected, you can deal with that one plant before it moves to another area that might be 12 feet away in another bed. And so you can really contain diseases much better, I think, in a raised bed. And depending on whether it's a pest or a disease, you can isolate those plants from other plants as well. So I use a lot of hoops in my beds. And so I'll have hoops in place all season long. And if something were to contaminate the plants with the, be it a disease or whatever it happens to be, I can just cover those beds and prevent insects from transferring it to another bed, and also allow me to deal with whatever I might need to do to eradicate that disease. And one of the things, I don't normally do any type of progressive change of plants from season to season, but when you identify like a soil-borne disease, now you can isolate and basically have that bed with the 3 or 5 or 7 years that might be recommended for that disease. And you don't need to grow any more plants in that bed. And it's clearly defined where that disease resides.
And then you're not planting in that bed again, or you're planting something different?
Yeah, you're planting something different. You know, diseases tend to target specific plants. So if you have a disease that is attacking your tomatoes, it's probably not going to affect your corn. And so that's what you can do as you rotate crops kind of around that bed, is you can still use it for plants that aren't susceptible to verticillium wilt or whatever that disease happens to be, until that period of time, you know, 7 years is often what I tend to use if I have a disease that pops up in a bed. And so that's why you have multiple beds that are all similar and you continue to grow. You just choose wisely what you're putting into a bed that might have a particular disease.
Yeah. I'm not sure if I've ever planted or worked with sweet potatoes, but Robin had tried, Jan had emailed. She planted She had some sweet potato slips. She started too early, and now they're pot bound, and wondered about advice for planting them at this stage.
Well, I'm a believer to plant anything you've got and hope for the best, because even if it doesn't work, you learn something from it. And raised beds, actually, for sweet potatoes, here in Colorado, we're not known as a sweet potato capital. It's very difficult to grow sweet potatoes, but I have been able to grow sweet potatoes in raised beds because of that extra sun and that extra heat during the summertime. It's elevated and it's getting earlier sun and later sun. So the day tends to be a little bit longer for the sunlight. The soil warms up nicely. And so even though you might have root-bound slips, I say go for it. Put them in the ground. See how the plant grows. You might not get sweet potatoes, but you can learn about keeping a sweet potato plant alive, particularly for those of us in challenging regions like Wisconsin and Colorado.
Yeah, that makes good sense. Laura emailed, cost quite a bit to fill a tall bed with purchased soil. They use some rotting tree stumps as the base, and then they put a layer of leaves on top of that, then compost, then they buy some soil and put on top of that. And you have any thoughts on that or recommendations or options?
Yeah, absolutely. In fact, my most popular video on YouTube that's approaching 5 million views is showing how to do that exactly, where you take a tall raised bed, you put logs and twigs and wood chips and leaves and pine needles and whatever other woody material you can find in essentially the lower half of the bed. So my 18-inch tall beds, the bottom 9 inches, are all that woody material, which really works to encourage the fungal growth, which can be beneficial for plants. But as that wood begins to rot, It's essentially a water reservoir at the base of the bed for those of us in dry regions. It helps moderate the soil moisture. It adds nutrients as it breaks down. And yes, maybe in the top three, I don't know if it's the most important, but it's cheaper to fill a raised bed that way because you're taking organic material. And then in the top half, that's all you have to worry about as far as purchasing or creating a good soil blend.
Leslie in Madison has a question. Leslie, hi.
Hi, thank you very much. I have a number of raised beds, and like last year, I planted all of them in peas early so that I can use the beds again. But some of the beds, the peas are coming up with yellow on the bottom, and I've researched it a little bit. Either it's a nitrogen deficiency or that wilt or mold or whatever it is that gets into peas, and why you should not plant peas in the same place every year. So now I know that. But so when I get the peas out of there, what can I plant in those boxes that will not be affected by whatever's getting the peas?
Yeah, so trying to define and identify just exactly what it is, because it could also be overwatering. A lot of times people are concerned about their plants and they start watering extra, and that can also cause the yellowing of the plant. And so if you've got all of the plants in the bed, it could be disease related or it could be overwatering. If it's some of the beds or some of the plants in the bed and not others, you have to look at what's causing the difference and whether it's not enough sun or too much sun. But the thing about peas being a legume is that they create their own nitrogen. So it's unusual for peas to have a nitrogen deficiency. And so if it is indeed one of those diseases, that's what Larry and I were talking about just a few minutes ago, you can still plant in that bed, just don't plant the type of legumes that might be susceptible to that same disease. And peppers and tomatoes and squashes would probably be fine.
And you know, Leslie, you could go to our plant disease diagnostic clinic. You can send a sample in of those. And Brian Huddleston, who's our plant pathologist, can tell you probably you may need to send a plant, or at least you'll probably a piece of a plant at least that maybe is just turning yellow, and he can give you a pretty quick answer as to, you know, is it a disease or is it something else, and that probably would be, you know, then you know and you can go from there. So UW Plant Disease Clinic, it will get you to Brian Huddleston and the instructions on what to do. Well, Scott, boy, the time flew. The last 30, 40 seconds here. Tell us more about YouTube's Gardener Scott.
Yeah, I've been a master gardener for over 20 years now. I've got hundreds of videos. I do a live stream every Monday morning where, like you, it's answering questions, it's having guests, it's talking gardening. And I'm planning to continue doing this for many more years to come because I just love talking about gardening. So I do it as often as I can.
Well, and those videos, you really do a nice job on those videos. I know what it takes to put one together, and these are very thoughtfully done. And anybody, the instructions are anybody can follow them. So, Scott, thank you so much for being with us today. Well, hopefully we can get you back, if you wouldn't mind, have you back.
Oh, I'd love to be back. I'm so glad that I was able to spend some time with you before you retire, and I hope you have a wonderful retirement. And yeah, maybe Jill will ask me back in the future.
Well, I bet you're going to get a little uptick on your YouTube videos here in the next few days. Thank you so much. Scott Wilson, better known as YouTube's Gardener Scott, our guest. Big thanks to him, and a big thanks to Clara Kniper, Joel Patnod, Lee Rayburn, and Jeff Robbins, our executive producer, Jill Nadeau. I'm Larry Mueller. Stay with us. Lots more in store.